thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Yeah.
Here's John Williams.
I think I'll put it in a memo. Just read the thing. Don't want to brag, but I just read the Nunes memo. It's like, holy cow!
Lord have mercy.
I've got it right here. And it's not shocking. It's really short. Thank you, Congressman Nunes. We don't like to read. Here in America. And so I'll tell you, the Cliff Notes would be invisible on this thing. I mean, for all that you've been wondering, all right, what's the fuss about? Here's the fuss. First, I thought, oh, I shouldn't read it. I don't want to be party to that. But you got to read it. It's not that shocking. So what I have in front of me, and what you'll have soon, I mean, you're probably a click away, or it'll be printed in full in the next edition of your favorite newspaper. But first, I have the letter from Don McGahn. That's the attorney to the president who threatened to quit, remember. I have the letter from Don McGahn to the chairman, Nunes, saying, okay, we are going to allow you guys to release this. The president's attorney said that the release of the memorandum would serve the public interest. In his letter to the chairman, Nunes, he said, the Constitution vests the president with the authority to protect national security secrets from disclosure. But then he goes on to say how in this case we should disclose them. The executive branch does so on the assumption that the committee will responsibly protect such classified information consistent with the laws of the United States. The committee has now determined that the release of the memorandum would be appropriate. The executive branch has worked to accommodate congressional requests to declassify specific materials. You asked, and here it is. It says, these standards permit declassification. Would public interest in disclosure outweighs any need to protect the information? And then there's a little heart. No, there's not. Don McGahn, counsel to the president. CC Honorable Paul Ryan, CC Honorable Adam Schiff. And then on four pages, it's just five bullet point paragraphs. It begins with a header, purpose, and it says, this memorandum provides members an update on significant facts relating to the investigation and the use of the Foreign Intelligence Service Act, that's FISA, during the 2016 presidential election cycle. Our findings, one, raise concerns with the legitimacy and legality of certain Department of Justice and FBI interactions with the FISA court, and two, represent a troubling breakdown of legal process. It says, and then it sort of gives us a little summary, because they knew I was going to be reading it, of how this works. FISA submissions are classified. As such, the public's confidence in the integrity of the FISA process depends on the court's ability to hold the government to the highest standard, particularly as it relates to the surveillance of American citizens. Now, there's the nut, isn't it? I mean, that really is important, and that's what this is all about. You and I don't get to see this. We have to trust that if we're going to allow the government to spy on us, that the FISA court must be protecting our rights and that there better be a very good reason for this. FISA submissions are classified. The public's confidence in the integrity of the process depends on the court's ability to hold the government to the highest standard. We all agree with that. This should include... So when you're making the case against somebody, this is interesting, isn't it? Here's what Nunes says. When you're going to make a case against somebody like Carter Page, the information you present, quote, should also include information potentially favorable to the target of the FISA application. The government had at least four independent opportunities before the court. However, material and relevant information was omitted. So the government was making its case to, say, tap Carter Page, but they weren't telling you the whole story. And then here are the five bullet points. Number one, the dossier compiled by Christopher Steele formed an essential part of the Carter Page application. Steele was a longtime FBI source who was paid over $160,000 by the DNC and the Clinton campaign. The memo says neither the initial application nor any of the renewals, and you have to renew it every 90 days and prove your case all over again if you're going to continue to spy on somebody, but neither the initial application or the subsequent ones disclose or reference the role of the DNC or the Clinton campaign in funding Steele's efforts. The initial FISA application does not name Fusion GPS. The application does not mention Steele was ultimately working on behalf of and paid by the DNC or the Clinton campaign. Point number two. The Carter Page FISA application also cited extensively. Okay, this gets a little convoluted, but this is what I understand. It says here, the application also cited extensively a news article by Michael Isikoff. Yeah, the famous Michael Isikoff. Isikoff wrote about Page's July trip to Moscow. In July of 2016, this Carter Page guy goes to Moscow, and Michael Isikoff wrote about that. But it says here that a lot of the information that he used was leaked by Steele himself to Yahoo News. In other words, it wasn't that independently sourced. It was Isikoff just essentially saying what Steele wanted him to say. And that's not good, at least for an application by a court. You can put that in, you can put that on in Newsweek or Yahoo News if you want, but that taints the credibility. Steele's numerous encounters with the media violated the cardinal rule of source handling, maintaining confidentiality. Steele talked way too much, they say. Number three of five, Steele admitted that he was, quote, desperate that Donald Trump not get elected and was passionate about him not being president. Number four, after Steele was terminated, a source validation report conducted by an independent unit within the FBI assessed Steele's reporting as only minimally corroborated. If you're going to use Steele's stuff, even the FBI says this is not a great source. And number five of five, the Carter Page FISA application mentions information regarding fellow Trump campaign advisor George Papadopoulos, but there's no evidence of any cooperation or conspiracy between Page and Papadopoulos. The Papadopoulos information triggered the opening of that FBI counterintelligence investigation. FBI agent Peter Strzok was reassigned, remember, after it says here, improper text messages with his mistress, FBI attorney Lisa Page, no relation to Carter Page. So a little bit about Papadopoulos there. And about those two FBI agents that have been reassigned since June of last year. And then four other points, largely saying that the dossier is so tainted that it calls into question the very application. And there is your Nunes memo. I know you're disappointed, aren't you? Or, I mean, I'm sorry, I was looking for something a little juicier here. And that's just my first read of it, and your first as well. Maybe something will jump out at you or me, or maybe somebody else will make more of a case for this to be really important. Like when I read this, I don't go, aha, the Russian investigation is bogus now because of this. And this is Nunes' case to the president and to all of us, and that it is. And I guess I'm seeing it through my filter, but I'm not convinced that the only reason that they're doing the investigation is because of what was in the Steele dossier. There are other things in there. And it wasn't just that court that had to sign off on this. But if you just said, okay, they issued that warrant, the court did. How many people have to be part of the quote-unquote conspiracy if you're going to believe that this was all just a scheme using the dossier to further the investigation? If you want to believe, you know, if you want to believe that, then you got to believe that the judges were in on it, that the head of the FBI was in it, the Department of Justice was in on it. And I think there's a lot to ask there. It's 117. You see the front page. We'll go back to this with Raj Krishnamurthy, one of our local congressmen, one who's agreed to come on with us after 2 o'clock. We'll talk to him about that. And again, if you are a Republican member of Congress, the number is 312-981-7200. Please text or call. 312-981-7200. No judging, just asking some questions here. The front page of the Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Tribune today are of the story of that Christian Gomez Garcia. Isn't this a fascinating story? He's there in court in Skokie to pay a parking ticket. Not a parking ticket. It was a moving violation. He ran a stop sign. He's 29 years old. He is a DACA recipient. He came here at the age of four. He's now 29. He's in the court, and when he walks out of the court after resolving this moving violation, ICE agents arrest him, and the next thing he knows, he's handcuffed and on his way to a jail in Wisconsin. And then everybody said, this is terrible. And so then the ICE official said, okay, well, let him go. I don't love the first part, and I don't love the second part either. If you're going to arrest somebody, arrest him. If you don't want to arrest him, don't. But what's most troubling to me about that is that they flipped in 24 hours. How does that happen? I talked to his mom. I talked to his attorney. I talked to his preacher. And I'll talk to him next on WGN. I suppose the point of the memo isn't what is in the memo. It's the point that they issued the memo at all, that they have, you know, warned us all that the process is tainted or politicized, it depending on which side of the thing you're on. So the content of it maybe doesn't matter so much. To me, it's a little Geraldo Rivero Al Capone vaultish, but you may think it's the Holy Grail, a real aha moment. Learn how real Chicagoans live the day-to-day struggles and successes with wealth, fitness, and food. Watch Living Healthy Chicago, Sundays at 11:30 on WGN-TV. It's 1:21. Reaction is pouring in after the release of that Intelligence Committee hearing. And Steve Bertrand has that in 9 minutes here on WGN. I just called my friend Christian Gomez to ask him to come on, and they said that he would, but now he says that his phone is busy. So he ain't joined us yet. Let's pick up a couple of phone lines then. In the meantime, we'll talk to Stephen. You're on WGN. It's John Williams. Stephen, how can I help you?
Yes, there are a couple points with regards to the memo.
Yeah.
I think are really very important, and even though you're somewhat playing it down. One, Andrew McCabe, sworn testimony, quote, says no FISA warrant would have been issued without the dossier. That, in turn, means that anything from that point forward that was used in those from those tapings or surveillance are violations of constitutional rights of all individuals.
Yeah, who said that? Carter Page?
Andrew McCabe.
Oh, Andrew McCabe.
Quoted. It's in that memo.
Yeah, where is it? I don't see it, actually.
Not a speculation on his part. It is, that is a question that he was asked, and that is a quote.
Okay, I'm reading the memo. I see him referenced here. I don't see that. But
yes.
Even if that's the case, and again, I don't see it here. He may have said it's in this memo. You've read it in this memo?
That is correct. It is in the memo.
All right, I'll read it again. I see it in the letter from McGahn back to Nunes, but I don't see mention of him.
Yeah, that sums up the whole thing. That means everybody who was surveilled, Flynn, Manafort, all of them.
But I don't know that it does. I mean, so if, here it is.
Will be dropped because their constitutional rights were violated.
Yeah, I don't know that you or he get to decide that.
No, we don't. But if you violate someone's, it's like not being read your Miranda rights. No matter what you've done, if you weren't given those, you're home free.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not the way I read it, but
it is. When you violate somebody's constitutional right, that's what happens.
No.
Look at the memo. He's
tell me where it is in the memo, though. Tell me where it is.
If you don't believe any else in the memo.
No. Just tell me where it is. I want to read it. Where is it in the memo?
I don't recall. I don't have it in front of me right now, but it is in there.
Yeah. Okay. I'll read it again. And so this is.
There you'll find it.
And this is McCabe, the deputy director.
That is correct. When he was being questioned by Congress.
Yeah.
Not on TV. This is the closed door session.
Mm-hmm.
A quote. So there's nobody speculating.
No, hold on. Just give me the facts as you recall them. So you read that McCabe said that Page's rights were denied. Is that what you're saying?
No. Let's not confuse it. Here's very clearly what he did. He said in a congressional meeting, in answering the question, said a warrant, the FISA warrant, would have never have been granted.
Oh.
Out the dossier.
It's boy, you would think that that would be all. You would think that would be all over this 5-point memo.
Yeah, well,
and it is not
a little closer.
Yeah, I will look more closely. Thank you for the call. I don't see it. It may be in here, but boy, if that was the point, then that they buried the lead here. Yeah. It's 125.
Yeah, before you go, can I just let you know that we're watching the Dow Jones Industrial Average. It's now down 514 points today.
Why is it
the
doing
NASDAQ
that?
The NASDAQ is down down 104. So the Dow is down about 1.95%, the NASDAQ 1.4%.
Are they saying why?
You know, I have to look, but earlier it was because the jobless numbers were so good that wages went up that the interest rates started ticking up. And so there were some concerns about inflation. It certainly has accelerated since the memo came out, but I don't know that I don't want to. Let me do a little more.
I know that when things happen concurrently, you think one's related to the other, and you're not saying that that is necessarily the case.
I am not. I'm going to try to find an expert who might have a better idea and let you know at 2:30 or 1:30.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's about 5 minutes away. In fact, since I just found this is Juan Solis, who is the attorney for that. Christian Gomez, who is on the front page of the papers. I'm going to take him for just a minute here. There's a lot of plates spinning here at WGN Radio right
I'll
now.
I'll say the world.
And I was so enjoying Steve getting something wrong that I guess now that I'm not ready, plate is about to fall.
Let me show
you. Well, that was my plate that actually did fall.
Let me show you how to handle that, John.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm seeing you're having a problem. Can I help you?
I'll try that next time.
Okay.
Go ahead and hit it, Elif.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
But I won't.
Here's John Williams.
Hi, it's John. Mm-hmm. We're on the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, otherwise known as Mercury.
Lord have mercy.
But listen, I'm not going to complain about the conditions under which we're working, because I don't go there. Lots to do in this hour. The best part will be the bright side of life in 30 minutes. You'll call in, tell us some good news in your world while you're smiling, and we'll smile with you. By the way, tomorrow is Steve Bertrand's birthday. I'll bet that's going to be his bright side. Steve's a big one for birthday celebrations.
Is it tomorrow?
It is, Steve. You might have forgot.
As much as you like yours and your birth month, Violetta, Steve is not a big celebrator of his. And I think we should respect that and not go, oh, hey, it's your birthday, any more than we already have.
Okay.
Is that Raj on line seven there? Raj Krishnamurtha, who is the congressional representative from the 8th District, joins us now on WGN Radio. Raja, it's John. Welcome back to WGN. How are you?
I am fine, thank you. Just another slow fake news day.
You read the memo?
I did, yes.
What's your reaction to it?
I'm very concerned that it was released. You know, I read it when it was available to members before being released today. I read it a few times, and I also had a chance to read the minority memo, which has not been released. I guess I have a couple of concerns. One is, you know, it fails to mention a lot of corroborating evidence that supported the FISA warrant. As the FBI itself said, you know, basically it omits material facts that, you know, fundamentally impact the memo's accuracy. And then the second thing that really bothers me is they decided to release this memo, but they refused to release the minority memo, which provides all of the other missing information. And that points to the bigger problem or challenge that we have, which is the utter politicization of the Intelligence Committee, which should otherwise be a nonpartisan or a bipartisan committee. And, you know, that's not good for any of us.
So is it your position on oversight that has enabled you to see both memos in advance?
Yes, sir. And also, you may already know this, but the Oversight Committee has been the forum for the launch of attacks on the FBI in another way, which is they're basically the majority is going after the FBI for its handling of the Hillary Clinton emails. And so I've spent about 10 hours in closed-door interviews with senior members of the FBI talking about Hillary Clinton. I never thought I'd be doing that in 2018 or late 2017.
You did that recently, in other words, the past week or
yes.
so? But let's
yeah,
go,
yeah.
Well, if we may, though, Congressman, can we go back to the Nunes memo?
Yes.
You read Schiff's ancillary memo. Could you talk at least about how he's laid out the other side on this?
Again, I can't see. This is the problem. I can't get into the details of that memo because it remains classified. But what I can say is that there's a bunch of other pieces of evidence that support the FISA warrant that was applied for in the case of Carter Page, and none of that is mentioned here.
I understand that, but if I may, paragraph
yes,
4
sir.
Of the Nunes memo specifically says, you know what I'm about to read, Deputy Director McCabe testified before the committee in December that no surveillance warrant would have been sought from the FISA court without the Steele dossier. How yeah. else am I to read that?
Yeah, but it doesn't talk about what the decider, the judge, the FISA judge, relied upon in authorizing the warrant. And that is the problem, that we don't have the totality of the information before us, nor do we have information about what the judge relied upon. And also, I should also say one thing, which I guess I don't want to go into classified information, but the one thing that folks should know is that this stuff about the dossier, you know, it's not unknown to the court, and you know, I think that we should take some of this with a grain of salt.
Pardon me. So elsewhere in the memo,
says
sure. The memo says extensively, multiple times that. That they did not present some of these compromises to the court. Why didn't they make the court aware of the fact that the DNC and the Clinton campaign were in part paying, eventually, it started by Republicans, but it was largely funded and used by the Democrats. Why did they not tell the court that? Are you saying the court was aware of that?
I'm not saying necessarily I know what was exactly presented to the court regarding that particular issue. What I am saying is that there's a lot about the provenance or the origin of this dossier that's known to a lot of folks, you know, as widely reported in the media.
Okay, now we got to read between those lines, Congressman. I guess.
I'm sorry. That's the.
But I mean, I'm sorry. I don't. It would be
that,
remarkable
you know,
to
a lot of this.
Okay.
The fact that they inconsistently released one memo and you know didn't release another is really at the heart of what makes it difficult to discuss this, and I think that's in part why the FBI you know in an unprecedented way you know released these statements today and then yesterday or the day before saying this is a grave error to release this memo.
Well, if I know that it was funded in part by the Democrats, and I think my kids know that it was funded in part by the Democrats. I don't know who these judges are in the FISA court, but if they subscribe to the Chicago Tribune, I think they know that too. I mean, maybe they should not rely on their, you know, native information, but doggone it, don't you think they were well aware of that?
Again, based on widely reported information, I would surmise that.
Yeah. Congressman, I'm going to let you go. I would impress upon you my desire to get any Republican members of the Illinois delegation on our show. I think their voices are more than absent here. When you bump into other members of the Congress who are Republicans, I guess today or this week, do you get any sense of what their attitude is about the release of this memo?
You know, honestly, I think that probably a lot of the rank and file are concerned about this politicization of the Intel Committee. If push came to shove, I think that they'd be surprised about you know what the heck is going on with our intelligence committee's oversight of the FBI and the intelligence community as a whole. This is just the wrong thing for America.
Raja Krishnamoorthy is in the 8th Congressional District in Washington. Are you in Washington, D.C. right now, Raj?
No, I'm in the Chicago area today.
Oh, pardon me. You were with Nancy Pelosi today, were you not?
No, I was not, no.
I thought maybe you were. You were at the State of the Union address?
Yes, sir, I was.
Give me 15 seconds on that. What was your overall assessment of the president's performance?
I like the sentiments of calling for unity and bipartisanship. I guess two problems or two challenges I have with the speech. One is it's out of step with how he's governed in the last year. And so I think some people are left, asking whether those are empty words. And then secondly, on some of the main priorities that he talked about, whether it's infrastructure or lowering the price of prescription drugs or career technical education, which is my passion in this Congress, there was surprisingly little in the way of substance. And so we need details. We need more information to know, can we work together going forward?
Nice to talk to you, Raja. We'll visit again. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you, sir.
I would ask you to, as part of the sentencing, to grant me 5 minutes in a locked room with this demon.
No, sir, I can't.
Would you give me 1 minute?
You know that I can't do that. That's not how our legal system works.
Father of one of Larry Nassar's victims, just feet away from him in the court, said, give me 5 minutes in the room, give me 60 seconds.
This is letting him have his power over us, okay?
The judge said, I can't do that, and then he just took matters into his own hands. He was wrestled to the ground after calling him a couple of names. Mark Elijah has been writing about this for the Indianapolis Star. In fact, how did this case ever come to light, period? The going on 300 women who say he touched them inappropriately and more. How did this even see the light of day? It's because they did a story about a gymnast, as I recall, and then somebody got back to the Indy Star and said, you guys don't have the whole story here. And that was the first domino. Mark Elijah joins us again on WGN Radio. Mark, thanks for taking some time. I know you're busy. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. If I can clarify a little bit about how it came about. The first story was in August 2016. It had nothing to do with Larry Nassar, but it had a lot to do with how USA Gymnastics handled or mishandled complaints about sexual abuse. And then on the day that story was published, a woman named Rachel Den Hollander emailed us, and she said, I was abused not by a coach, but by a doctor, and if you're interested, I'll talk with you. She went on the record by name, and we published a story, and after that, it just snowballed with people going to Michigan State University Police, people calling us, Larry Nassar supporters calling us to say that the great and wonderful man couldn't possibly have done what we were saying, and why are you smearing a great man's reputation? So that's kind of how it all came about.
Let me just leap ahead to one of the questions that's been nagging me this week, and then we'll go back to specifically what happened in that court. Do you think Tom Izzo is going to survive this?
Oh, I don't know at all. I'm not as plugged into the Michigan State stuff as I am USA Gymnastics as an organization, because they're here in Indianapolis. My company, Gannett, has properties in Lansing and Detroit, and they're much closer to that situation.
What did you think of what happened in the court yesterday? Or was that was yesterday, right? Where?
No, today.
That was today.
Yeah.
What was your reaction to that? Yeah.
Well, I was not in the courtroom, and I just saw some tweets about an hour or two later, and I thought I had seen everything from this case, but apparently not. The previous week, last week, the sentencing in a different Michigan county was very unorthodox. The courtroom had people applauding. They were standing and applauding. One victim, survivor, asked to play a music video that she thought would help survivors, and the judge said, okay. There were cameras clicking. There were reporters tweeting Not that that's all that unusual, but it was really different. And even when Rachel Den Hollander spoke, she was criticizing a defense attorney who was not present, but another person from her firm stood up to object to the judge, and somebody from the audience said, "Sit down." Somebody else from the audience said, "Sit down." And it just was not what you would expect. So it's an incredibly charged atmosphere. This was the father of three daughters. And a lot of people would say, how can you blame him? A lot of other people would say that's not what we do.
You're not supposed to do that. No, you know, that's nobody wins when that happens. But am I mad at that guy? Do I think that guy needs to go to jail? Do I blame him? No. My goodness,
no.
That poor man.
No.
Now, I don't know. Somebody said to me in the hall today, well, where was he when his three daughters were going through this all these years? I don't know the answer to that, but I certainly understand his anger and frustration looking at that guy smirking back at him. What was your view of some of the things the judge herself said when she sentenced him? She seemed to relish the spotlight. What was your observation about that?
I don't know. I'd rather not try to characterize, whether she was enjoying herself or not. But she was almost like a therapist. She was telling after the survivor victims had made their statements, each one, she always had some sort of reaffirming thing to say to them. And the victim, the hearing went on with all these people in the audience clapping after each victim survivor. And it went on when people were standing. And she allowed all that to go on. Creating an extremely charged atmosphere, like I was saying. So it was different, but our reporting had been out there for a long time, and it was this scene last two weeks, that kind of shook people and made them pay attention.
All right. Mark, I appreciate your reporting. I appreciate you making yourself available to us this week and last week and maybe next week or the week after. Keep doing what you do, and thanks for giving us some of your time.
Thanks, Mutz. Take care.
It's 2:28. By the way, I got an email from a listener the last time we talked about the behavior of that judge, and some of you said that she was doing what everybody wanted to hear, and some of us questioned it. In fact, some people in town said, if I was an attorney for Nassar, I would say we should throw the whole thing out because the judge exhibited too much bias in the case. I don't know about that. I did get this email. It said, John, I have some insight about why the judge may have been over the top when she sentenced Larry Nassar. I'll make this succinct. About 35 years ago, my sons told me a family friend had molested them. Over my husband's objections, I had the guy arrested, and he confessed to 55 kids in 5 counties in the previous 5 years. The police contacted everyone they could find, and 2 families agreed to file charges. It took tremendous courage for my sons and the other child from one of the other families to give depositions. Ultimately, the police decided they would use my 11-year-old son's testimony and file using his name because he had the best details. By the way, I traded emails with the person that sent me this note and said, is it okay if I share this story? And she said, I wished you would. So she writes, we sat in court, and that scumbag stared at my son and I for over 5 minutes. And we stared back. He whispered then into his lawyer's ear. The lawyer approached the bench and changed his plea from innocent to guilty but mentally ill. And he was sentenced to 5 lousy years. That meant my son did not have to testify that day. It was over in 15 minutes. And damn it, it felt incomplete. No one thanked the kids for their courage or help. Perhaps the judge in the Nassar case was just giving credence to the testimony of the women who came in afterwards, who came forward. It is a daunting task to give depositions and be prepared to testify. Perhaps that was her way of thanking them. I know my sons and I
would have appreciated it. Steve, I just want to read. It's 2:40 on WGN. This is John Williams in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Looks lovely out there. Steve just told you how cold it is. People are saying things like this to me, Steve. I'll just read one text. So the president declassifies information the FBI says will jeopardize national security. And you're surprised the stock market crashes? I'm telling you, it's just not being reported that way. I have not seen a lot of reporting in the last hour that's linking those two.
No, I keep looking, too, and I'm no expert, but the experts I'm looking at are all talking about the interest rates going up earlier today in reaction to the jobs and the wages increasing.
Isn't it funny, though? So the worst.
I mean, it's logical. You would think of it. I mean, it's a pretty big and very controversial news story. It has to do with national security, so you could see where that would have the impact.
But, oh, yeah.
And there's no definitive answer, but the experts who know a lot more about it than we do say that it's about the jobs report.
This is the worst week on the Dow in 2 years and one of the worst days, so down 600 points we'll probably close at. Although it's been swinging a little wildly. You said it gained 100 points back,
right,
and then lost that again.
Yeah, we're down about 616 now.
And so the big question is, what's better for us? You know, we can take a 600-point hit, considering where we've been in the last 9 months, 12 months, we're due. Would you trade that for higher wages and more jobs? And I suppose the big picture answer is yes. Remember, Main Street and Wall Street are different places, but maybe this isn't all such a bad thing. Just don't look at your statements today. If you're lucky
enough. No, it's okay. I looked at mine today. I'm just not going
to
look at it on Monday.
Yeah, maybe that's. Well, yeah, you looked at it before.
Right.
And we lost 600. It's 2:41. This is WGN. I don't read my palms. I read the Psalms. They speak to me. I know what you're saying, John. That Kimbra rocks. I don't want to be caught in your social machine. Well, if I thought you were going to play the one Kimber song I knew, this isn't that, is it? But it's one Elif likes. And Kimbra is at the Concord Music Hall tomorrow night at 7, featuring Arc Iris. Tickets $20 to $27. You get them on Ticketfly. Kimbra's in town. Super Bowl 52 with the Chicago View at the Jay Parker in Hotel Lincoln. $15 buckets of beer all day on the top floor of Hotel Lincoln. That sounds fun. The Bulls are at the Clippers. If you're setting your TV schedule, that's at 2:30 tomorrow. And tomorrow, our Blackhawks got to keep winning. They take on the Flames in Calgary. You can hear that here on WGN. Want to go hear more music? Mavis Staples is at the Vic tomorrow. Doors open at 7.
Hey, did you hear Justin Kaufman's promo? I think she's on tonight with Justin.
Is she really? I was wondering if Greg Kot was going to be at Mavis Staples' show because he and she are close. Evidently, Justin's got a door, huh?
Well, I heard it out of the corner of my ear, so I think that's.
Let's advertise that at 9 o'clock tonight. Did you catch the time on it, Steve? What time?
I'm not even sure I heard it, but no, I don't know.
Groundhog Day and a beer party at the Logan Theater tonight. The doors at 8 open up. It's a special screening of Groundhog Day, and they'll have a beer bash as well. $7, it looks like, to $9 for tickets. Is that right? 2:44. Hey, what's your bright side? Give me some good news in your world. Marsha Lyles, one of our sales assistants, comes down Fridays at this time, and there she is. Hi, Marsh.
Hi, John.
You look terrific. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
In the Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. All you need to do is call or text. You'll read the text.
That's right.
You've got a bright side loaded.
I do.
Ready to roll. Violetta, you got your bright side ready to roll?
I do.
Kevin's not in sports yet. Steve, Elif, and I will all give you what our good news is. All you have to do is join the party. 312-981-7200. Call or text right now. Here we go. 1-7200.
Some things in life are bad.
Let's do some good news.
Really
something that's making you smile.
Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, that grumble, give a whistle.
We do this every Friday at this time. And we love it when you play along. Now get ready to sing.
And always look on the bright side of life.
And whistle.
always look on the light side of life.
All right, Marsha, you're whistling. What's your bright side?
My bright side is I did my first solo interview with an entertainer this morning on my podcast.
Oh, that's right. What's the name of that podcast you and Domati do?
Shypedia.
Shypedia. Who did you talk to?
Ernest J. He's a comedian. He's in town at the Chicago Improv this weekend.
So if I surf it right now, I'll be able to find your podcast.
We have not dropped it yet, but it will be up tonight.
Hey, Violetta, you got a bright side? What's some good news in your world?
I do. Someone started a hashtag on my Twitter called Valentine's for Violetta. And instead of flowers and candy, he's doing nice deeds in the whole month of February
in
my
name.
So,
wow.
It's really nice. And I think, you know, kindness matters. Pass it on, whatever hashtag goes there. And it's just a really nice gesture.
This on your birthday month. I don't know if you heard, but it's Violetta's month for her birthday. Hey, Kevin, what's your bright side over there in sports?
John, my birthday month is only 3 months away, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Okay.
Super Bowl party, my place, Sunday, whoop, whoop. John. We're doing whoop, sausages, whoop. We're doing meatballs, we're doing pizza. It's going to be beautiful.
Why are you laughing, Steve Bertrand? What's your bright side?
So, Kevin.
I know.
I'm going to head to the Marquette game with a big group of my graduating classmates.
My bright side is, you know that commercial on TV for Geico where there's an alien invasion and all the rockets are coming by and firing, pew, 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 and the guy strolls into the command center. He says, okay, let's go. Good luck, Captain. And then he starts hitting his pants pockets for his keys. He can't find his keys. I love that commercial.
Awesome commercial.
Is there anything better on television than that? That is so me. I could save the world, but I can't find my damn keys. Where's my keys?
You're so modest.
I know. Well, it really doesn't matter because... And then they're all going, we know it's on the little silver thing, and everybody's looking in drawers. God.
Next, what the commercial's missing is the wife in the back seat saying, well, where did you put them?
Where did you put them last, Captain? All right, what do you got, Ella?
I'm photographing Kimbra tomorrow at her concert.
Yeah, big Kimbra fan here. You're going to go see, review, and photograph Kimbra.
And she's going to photograph awesome.
Elif, woo, 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 woo. Here's some phone calls. Let's start with, I think that's Kevin on line one. You're on WGN. Give me some good news, Kevin.
Well, the good news is my second granddaughter just turned a year old. Her first steps yesterday started walking.
Oh, man. Congratulations. What a great day. I appreciate your call. Hey, by the way, Elif, where's my friend Jim? Did you make that call? He's supposed to be on the bright side. Stand by, Jimmy. A buddy of mine, the Chicago Bears had a contest. Tell us who you would take to the Super Bowl and why. And he won. They flew him up today. They're putting him up in a hotel for two nights. He gets not only good seats to the Super Bowl, he gets field passes to walk around and spending cash.
What?
He won the contest that the Bears had. Each team gets two tickets to give away, and my buddy won them. And he's having the time of his life with a Vietnam veteran buddy of his. He said, hey, I want to be on the bright side. Let me call. And we'll put him on the mix. Oh, is that him on line 11? All right, Jimmy, I just told your story. How are you, my friend?
I am fine, John. How are you?
Where are you?
I'm in Minneapolis. I'm on my way to the Super Bowl. A compliment to the Chicago Bears football club.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's the temperature there, sir?
Well, this morning it was a brisk -7 when I got off the blue line. And I think it creeped up to a little bit above zero today, but... You know, I'll deal with it because, I'm doing what I got to do with my buddy, and we're going to enjoy the Super Bowl.
What's the highlight going to be?
I think the highlight, we're going to the hockey game tonight. Tomorrow we're going to meet with Lou Nanny for lunch, and I can thank him for what he did for me way back when.
Yeah.
And on Sunday we have field passes day of game, and we're going to have a group photo on the field, and it's going to be pretty awesome.
I know. Run onto the field. At some point, take off your shirt and run onto the field so we can see you.
I'll be 67 years old tomorrow. Tomorrow is my birthday.
How about that? How about that? Steve Bertrand, my buddy here, has a birthday tomorrow too, and he's 67 also. This is amazing.
February 3rd, 1951. A lot of great people were born that day, evidently.
Hey, Jimmy, I love you. Yours is a special story. Congratulations to you. It's so nice of you to say, I want to spend the Super Bowl with one of my buddies who rescued me in Vietnam. You guys are great friends. It's a great story, and I'm glad that you won, my friend.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you to the Bears for making this possible. It's a great thing.
If you want to know the full story, Google Schmeek, as in Mary Schmeek, Zwit, as in Jim Zwit, that's Jim. And the story for which, in part, she won the Pulitzer Prize is his. It's titled Memorial Mission. Memorial Mission. Back to your calls. Here we go. It's Gail next. Gail, you're on WGN. What's your bright side?
My bright side is that I got a new iPad today, and everything transferred over from the old one.
Oh, man.
And now I'm, and I'm listening to the WGN app in Naples, Florida.
Oh, thank you, Gail. Thank you, Gail. We're going from Gail to Marcia. Read another text, Marsh.
All right. This is from 608, the lady's voice from Penny Mustard radio commercial. That's my bright side every day. I would love to have her voice as an alarm notification in the morning.
You know, those commercials are so hokey, corny, and cheesy, and they work. I actually think they're pretty good.
Like Cars for Kids.
It's a nice... No, it's not like Cars for Kids. That's the point I'm trying to make. This campaign is a good one. Let's go from there to Sue. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Sue?
Hi, my bright side is I became a great grandmother for the first time on Wednesday to Riley Elizabeth, a beautiful baby girl.
Thank you for the call. Let's go to line four, and that's going to be Susan. You're on WGN. Give me some good news, Susan.
My daughter graduates from the University of Illinois College of Engineering in May, and this week she found out she is being honored as the top student in the graduating class.
Wow. We got some smart listeners, and they got some smart kids, let me tell you. Congratulations. Thanks for that call. Let's go to line number nine, and I think that is Marty. You're on WGN. Hi, Marty.
Hey, John. I want to pay off a major debt this weekend, and after listening to your business report, sounds like in the nick of time.
I missed some of that, but I'm really... did you catch everything you just... Go ahead, say it again.
I'm going to pay off a major debt this weekend, and after listening to your business report, it sounds like just in the nick of time.
No kidding. Thanks for the call. How about Jim on line five? Hey, Jim, you're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Well, there's no mosquitoes in Madison, Wisconsin today.
Read another one to us, Marsh.
847, going out to celebrate tonight a friend who just got her papers. She has lived here since she was 8 and is married with 3 kids and finally legal in this country.
How about that? How about that? Let's go to Joan. You're on WGN. It looks like Joan's on line 8. Hey, Joan, you're on the air. What do you want to say?
Speaking of business reports, I closed on a sale of a house last week just in time for the market to get an
opening. I'm glad you did. She just closed on a house last week before whatever's about to happen is happening. Thank you, Joan. You got another one for me, Marsh?
This sounds sort of like Joan. 630, we've lost our home of 25 years. However, we've just signed a lease for our lovely home. We have a roof over our head.
This is Stuart. You're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Stu?
Well, King John, we got to get that paperwork pushed through quick. But my bright side is after years of trying to get through for contests and things, I finally got through to WGN Monday morning with Steve Cochran and won 2 tickets to see Billy Joel at Wrigley Field.
Ah, boy. How about Mike? Hey, Mike, you go next. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Kind of following the last guy. I actually was on the Cochran show this morning and won Blackhawks tickets. Go Hawks.
Forget about your seat. How about Mark? Audience a grin. Hey, Mark, you're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hi, John. 2 weeks ago, 4 of us from the high school class of 1967 went to visit our coach. We're basketball players. And he's recuperating from a mild stroke, but he's able to talk, sharp as a tack, his memory's great. He rehashed all of his high school basketball career all the way up through his coaching career, and we just all came out glowing. He's 82 years old, sharp as a tack, and goodness just oozes out of him.
What's the coach's name, Mark?
Well,
who is this guy?
Dick Flays.
What a nice gesture, then and now. Thanks for the call, Mark. All right, Marcia, your turn.
All right, 815. I get to ride my motorcycle. Sun is shining.
Okay, you do get to do whatever you want to do. Read another one, Marcia. Another bright side.
All right. Another bright side from 815. My 19-year-old daughter finally got a full-time job. Pay for your own car insurance.
We did this on Fridays. You call in, tell us some good news. We smile. You smile, too. Let's hear from Marcia Lyles.
All right. Happy
Marcia,
Groundhog
thanks for helping
Day.
Us out on that. By the way, The Bright Side is sponsored by our friends at the Joint Relief Institute. Okay, so here's the Irene Mahoney story, and maybe you can relate. Irene had knee pain, and when you have knee pain, you have life pain. And she figured, well, that's just the way it is for me, but it's not anymore. She went to that Joint Relief Institute in Orland Park, and not only did she get relief from the pain in her knee, she got relief in her life. These are the people I went to for my troublesome knee, too. They use precise digital imaging to know exactly where the tissue is missing. And then they gently place a joint lubricant into that spot. I'm telling you, it works. Your insurance almost certainly will pay for it. They have over 100 five-star Google reviews. They're in Orland Park, and here's their number, 708-888-0000. 708, like, you know, Orland Park, suburbs, 888. It's like a bunch of zeros, and then 0000, as in zero pain. All right, Ro Khan just strolled into the studio. Hi, Ro.
I did. I'm
speaking of zero pain.
Oh, pardon me. There's Anna. Oh. She just strolled in too. Hi, Anna.
I have. I don't know. It's panic pain. I don't
think,
know. What is it?
It kind of qualifies. It's FISA Friday, so yeah, I thought you might be experiencing some degree of.
Well, what's your take on the memo, campers?
Okay. I'm a guy.
Maybe
I'm
shouldn't have asked.
I'm a sunshine antiseptic kind of guy. At least it's what I claim. If in fact the this Carter Page was completely and utterly done in by a political memo, then that seems like the wrong thing to
do. You mean the dossier?
Yeah, the dossier. If that's it, and it's not verifiable. That's what this memo is alleging. If, in fact, there were other reasons, like, for example, Carter Page was under FBI investigation in 2013 and 14 before, this was years before Donald Trump was ever considered to be seriously a candidate.
He was
and
living in Moscow.
And before he even knew Donald Trump, and then somehow this guy worked his way into the Donald Trump campaign. I mean, I think that then I think, you know, a FISA judge is probably going to be looking at a lot of different things here. And I think that Republicans are trying to, I think here's what they've been told. I think Republicans have been told, listen, by the Trump people. We had nothing to do with it. Yes. Did they interfere? Yeah, maybe they interfered, whatever. You guys, that's up to you. You guys figure that out. But they weren't directly involved in us. We won this. I don't want any more, allegation that we had something to do with this. Yeah, did they reach out to us? Okay, yeah, they reached out to us a couple of times, but we didn't do anything about it. You guys go fix this and get us out of it because we need, tax reform and blah, 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 blah. Right? That's, I think, the way the White House, that's the only way the Republicans, because I'm telling you, these Republicans who are standing up, the ones that are standing up right now in the House of Representatives, who they're standing on the precipice of a cliff. If they are wrong about this, they take themselves down, they take the president down. If Carter Page ends up to be a Russian spy, if Carter Page ends up to have tried to influence or collaborate with the Russians and the campaign, the whole thing comes crashing down.
And maybe you have a case even without Carter Page, too. No? I mean, maybe they can do it without Carter Page.
I mean, there might be some other things. I mean, the other thing is Trump, is he personally, or the Trump organization personally, impacted by their exposure to Russian assets? That's another question.
Who's going to talk to you about this?
Michael Steele is going to be here to talk to us about it. Also, the Dow, biggest one-hit day in almost 2 years. On the Dow. We kind of expected this. It started with Bitcoin. There you go, Kev. There goes your Bitcoin.
These millennials and their Bitcoin.
Yeah. Bitcoin taking a pooper. And then inflation fears. This has nothing to do with the Russian dossier.
I know, but boy, they coincided. It
didn't
was really
they? There
weird.
Were the overlap, yeah. And then the fact that it's down below 600 points is a little.
So Susie Sunshine will be here. Noticeable. Tom Skilling will tell us about the what's happening this weekend. It's not going to be so pretty. And then Pat Brady's going to tell us whether or not Donald Trump's going to prison. All of that's coming your way.
I think shovelable snow is pretty, but I'll get out of the way.
I'm sure you do. Yeah, fine. You slip and slide in it.